This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
This is The Mainframe. Welcome everyone to our new series. This is the Smarter Product Creation Strategy series. In this first episode, we're going to talk about why you should develop your own products. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing good. And it's interesting, the whole thing about product creation, because in the last couple of years, we've created so many products.
Yeah, we have a lot going on. And it's nice to have processes and things in place so that you can roll them out relatively smoothly. I mean, there's always going to be bumps, but that's the great thing about having a product creation strategy, because if you follow the process, even when you hit bumps, you can get things back on track pretty easily.
In business, you have to have your own products, really. And one of the things we should talk about is why that's the case. Why should you have your own products? Why not sell advertising? What's the advantage we have here having our own products and services? Why not sell advertising or sell affiliate products?
That's a question that comes up pretty often. A lot of people getting started in the content side of things when they're developing a blog or anything that they're going to be producing content, they need to find a way to monetize, look at advertising as the first place to kind of go. And in fact, you know, these days it's kind of hard to really make any good money from advertising. Now, even affiliates is another model that we really like, but getting started from a point of an affiliate sometimes requires the same amount of work and effort that you would have to put into building your own product, right? I mean, it's kind of like you're doing a lot of the same steps you would have to do.
Yeah, the challenge with affiliate marketing and selling advertising is you're essentially getting paid to send people away, and you're developing all this attention. You're working hard to attract people to you, and then you're saying, here, click on this and go to this other place, go to these other people, because the only way you get paid is if they click, and with affiliates, if they click and buy. So you have to work hard to send people away that you've worked hard to attract.
And then there's the obvious elephant in the room of the new ad blockers. And when we say new, hitting more on mobile, but people have been using ad blockers for years. And if people don't see the ads, they're not going to click on the ads. And a lot of times when they're clicking on ads, it's not really doing a lot for you anyway. So products is a great way to kind of guarantee that they stay, unlike sending them away, like Chris was saying, but also a way that you can get those products front and center, built around the kind of information and content that you're already providing. So everything is very congruent and fits with the model that you're putting together.
Yeah, the ad blockers and advertising budgets reducing, that's a perfect storm of advertising basically being ineffective, at least ineffective if that's all you have. And that's why newspapers are struggling, and that's why a lot of media businesses are trying so hard to get attention. You know, the clickbait BuzzFeed thing is because they have to get those eyeballs. It's a race to the bottom, really, because the budgets are being funneled into other places. And Facebook and Google, they're doing well. The small websites, not doing so well. The newspapers, not doing so well. And let's face it, the advertising that you actually want, the stuff that you enjoy, that's content marketing. Nobody goes to YouTube and says, oh, great, I have to wait 25 seconds because there's an advert I have to wait through. Really, TiVo and PVRs, they're ad blockers. The reason why they were so popular is because you could skip ads. Obviously, the time shifting, massive benefit as well. But the reason we don't like sitting through TV as it's broadcast is because of the ads. So if you're making money off something that's offensive and annoying, then that's really a bad place to be.
You know, that's a great point, because there's only so much that people will sit through. I mean, for example, the new international trailer for Force Awakens, Star Wars Force Awakens, came out this morning, and it's got a bunch of new footage, and I wanted to see it so badly that I actually sat through an ad. You know, I let the ad go. Actually, I didn't watch the ad. I pulled it up on my phone. The ad started rolling. I set my phone aside. I did something else and kind of looked in the corner of my eye, saw the ad was over, and picked it up and watched this amazing new trailer with some great new footage. There's a couple of those types of things that I'm willing to sit through ads on. But for the most part, the content has to be so compelling to get people to sit through an ad or even to read an ad that a lot of times it's not really worth it. You're not really getting a lot from it. So kind of using that as your model is, you know, is not a good strategy. But, you know, we've mentioned affiliate marketing, and affiliate marketing, being in the affiliate business is a great model. It works for a lot of people. People make a lot of money at it. So let's touch on it a little bit. We'll go into a little bit more detail on it because it's not something we want to just brush over, because it is something to look at, sort of that middle ground, right?
Yeah. Affiliate marketing works well because they're actually getting something that's going to be useful to them that you're making a recommendation about. It might actually be part of your content delivery is giving them a serving suggestion or a recipe that they need to buy certain things in order to get the value out of your advice. So it fits into other models. It doesn't have to be a business model on its own. It can actually be complementary. For example, if you're educating people about software, they might need a laptop and you send them to Amazon. Or it might be that you're teaching electronics and there's a robot kit that you recommend, or knitting patterns. It might be a certain wool and needles they need. I don't know much about knitting, so that's probably wrong, but you get the idea. So it can be very complementary to what you're already doing.
And I think the thing you need to look out for are some of the pitfalls, because when you send somebody away anytime, whether it's to an ad or through an affiliate experience, you don't control that experience anymore. And you're relying on your reputation to build an audience, but then you're sending them somewhere else who's now in control of that experience. So you need to be careful with that as a pitfall, because, you know, once you send them away, you don't have control of what's happening over there where you send them.
Yeah, and as nerds, we'd use the example of Fantastic Four and the Spider-Man movies, where Marvel licensed their intellectual property out to people who did a really bad job, and it harmed them. It harmed their comic book sales, and it harmed the fans' enjoyment, because the experience was not in their control, and so they're trying to claw that control back. And obviously, it wasn't an affiliate relationship, but it was handing over their audience to the care of somebody else who did a bad job. And there's that risk there. It's your audience in somebody else's hands, and that can be a good or a bad thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. And another example is how being involved with your own product versus something else. So, for example, Walking Dead, you know, Kirkman wrote the books, and he's also involved in the show. So the show can reflect what happens in the books, or he can make changes on the show that better kind of reflect the story that he's trying to tell in that medium, or even fix some things that he wished he hadn't done. We talk a lot about here. He talks a lot about how he really wished he wouldn't have had these different elements that happened, like Rick losing his hand. Well, on the show, he still has his hand. In the books, he lost it early on, and he says he can tell a better story. Plus, there's effects involved and all this other stuff. So he has that control on both, because they're both his product. He's created that product, and he's not turned it over to somebody else to take control. So there's an example of why you would want to maintain control of your own product, where you control the entire experience and that you can really bring to it all that you know about it and provide the best possible experience for your customers.
Yeah, and that experience extends out into the future, in that their future experience is probably going to be with the people you sent them to, the person they're buying from. So you're having to constantly attract new people to send away. You don't get to build that customer list. If you send somebody to Amazon, you don't know if they purchased or not. You don't know who they are. Whereas if you sell your own product, you generate a valuable asset, you generate a customer list, and then you have that lifetime value. You have the opportunity to sell them something else, cross-sell, upsell. If you send them to somebody else, unless they share that list with you, and in most cases they won't, you've lost that insight, you've lost that information.
So let's talk a little bit about the different types of products you want to consider and some things that you might want to avoid.
The Mainframe is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, a complete website solution for building your own online marketing and sales platform. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform. Stop trying to hack together your website yourself. Head over to rainmaker.fm/platform today and get back to building your business.
Okay, so let's start with some of the obvious choices, like your services, consulting, and coaching. What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
I think it's something that everybody should consider. And there's been a lot of talk about not selling your hours, right? People say you should not try to have an hourly rate. You should instead go beyond that. But to get started, I think it's the best place to start because it's the easiest and quickest way to get started. And really, if your personality allows it, mine doesn't, you could cold call to get those customers. So you don't have to have a flashy website. You don't have to have a lot of technology. You don't have to build a lot of infrastructure to start selling consulting or coaching.
Yeah, and I think that one of the misconceptions about trading time for money is how to do it effectively. Because there are coaches and consultants who make a lot of money and actually don't work, you know, 100-hour weeks. They've really figured out a way to, you know, show that high perceived value and deliver it in a way that allows the customer to realize that they're worth the rate that they're paying. So there is something to be said for doing this because it's easy to start. You can build on your existing expertise. If you're already in the services business, you may be doing this in one form or another anyway. So to productize it, to put something around it that you can sell is a good place to start. But you don't want to end up in a trap of that's all that you have is you've now continue to sell your time for money in a way that it doesn't scale. So that's the next step, right? To start looking at how you can scale this up.
Yeah, and you touched on this, and I think we should reinforce this idea that you don't have to be cheap because you're selling by the hour. Look at lawyers, right? We don't tend to think of the typical lawyer as being cheap. Unless it's a character on The Simpsons, a lawyer tends to be highly paid. So coaching and consulting can be high ticket. Some of the biggest companies that we know, agencies and consultancies, they are very high ticket. And that's because there's a lot of value. It's high perceived value, high actual value. But obviously, the higher the price, the more you need case studies and testimonials.
Yeah, because there's a lot more risk for the customer there if they're going to be plunking down, you know, $500 for an hour of your time or whatever. So you need to make sure that you can demonstrate that you do have the expertise. And having social proof through case studies and testimonials is a great way to kind of mitigate some of that risk that they feel for having to spend a good deal of money for a coaching session.
And it reinforces the idea that we talk about a lot, which they're buying an outcome. So you need to sell the outcome. You don't necessarily sell your process. You don't sell you so much as what you can bring about for them. And that's where the high ticket items come in, because the bigger the outcome, the more valuable that outcome, the more somebody's going to be willing to pay for it. And so that risk, as you just said, Tony, that does come into play. What I did was I had introductory products that were packaged, that were easy yes products, I called them. So I would have a site critique package, and it had a fixed fee. It had a fixed outcome. They knew exactly what they were going to get. I wrote a sales page for it, had some testimonials. I actually demonstrated it because one of the choices was public or private. The public critiques were up on my blog, so other people could read them and get value from them. And they actually got shared quite a bit, which was good for me, but also was publicity for them. So people could actually see it in action. That's proof. So it was something easy for somebody to sign up for, but also led naturally to other products and services, because once I told them what they needed to change, the next thing was, well, how do I do that? Can you help me implement it? Can you do some of this for me? Can you show me how to do it? Have introductory products, which then can naturally lead to the rest of your services.
Yeah, and they can also lead to a more packaged version of your expertise in an educational product. So that's kind of the next step, where you take your expertise that you're providing on, you know, one-on-one coaching sessions or in group sessions or Q&As, and you start to package that, you know, in book form or course form, membership sites, or even live events in a way that takes that expertise, but now you're delivering it to a wider audience in a way that allows you to kind of capture a bigger part of that target.
Yeah, you can sell more to more people, and that's a great thing. And it's not an either or, they can be very complementary. So the funny thing that I found through having books out there and all this content was you become the natural person for them to go to have it done for them or to teach them how to do it. The book doesn't negate your services or your other products. It actually works as an introductory gateway drug almost to the rest of your stuff.
So, and then if we're moving up the ladder to kind of more challenging and more complex things to do, we talk about like physical products, because there's a lot more involved in dealing with physical products that make it kind of a challenge to do, especially in the beginning, but it is something you can work up to.
Yeah, the challenge is manifested in many different ways. But one of the things that has stopped me getting involved in physical products is the whole thing of shipping. And so people talk about drop shipping, but again, you're putting your reputation in somebody else's hands. How do you get away from the commodity thing? That means creating your own product. Creating your own physical product is a lot more challenging than creating a digital product, not just because of warehousing and inventory, but there's laws around the world, testing. It has to be fit for purpose. There's the whole customer service aspect. That's why so many Kickstarters fail. It's not something to go into lightly.
And then we move up into software, which a lot of people think is going to be easier than, say, a physical product. But there's a lot of its own challenges when you're moving to software because, you know, unlike an educational product, there's a lot more involved, especially if you're not the programmer yourself and you have to work with somebody else.
Yeah, and offshoring has got a really bad reputation. But for some people, it's the only way to do it within a budget. If you don't know that it's going to be a success, you're spending money on your credit card, I can understand why people would go cheap, but that does impact the quality of your product. And it moves the problem from the product itself and the delivery of the product to your customer service. And customer service is something that you and Brian realized was going to be a big impact early on, right?
It is. And people don't realize how important your customer service is to everything. I mean, we say customer service is the foundation of everything we do, including our marketing. And it is marketing because a lot of times, aside from maybe your copy, it's the only time people interact with you or your company. So you really need to think about how you're going to approach customers. Now, you can't make everyone happy. And one thing that we encounter, everybody encounter, there's going to be a vocal minority who insists that they are speaking for this customer. You know, they have all these great ideas and they're very boisterous and they're very complainy. But what you'll find is that those people tend to be small in minority if you're delivering a quality product. And if that is a majority, then you need to really look at your product. So you can actually gauge that. And when you're dealing with customer service, you really have to take into account who is the customer talking. Is it a, you know, a small minority of people who really aren't a good fit for this product? And maybe they should just be refunded and said, you know, I'm sorry, you know, it wasn't a good fit, but happy to give you your money back. You can go on your way. Or is it really more of a majority or a larger portion of your customers are not finding it, you know, your service right or the product's not right. So you can use that as feedback, but use both sides of it when you're going into the idea of feedback.
Yeah, don't under budget for customer service. It's not something that you can be completely hands off about. It's where you have a lot of interaction with your customer and you can make them delighted or you can absolutely ruin your reputation. You could have the world's best technology or software or ideas or concepts, but your customer service is paramount.
And we've talked a lot about onboarding as part of this podcast and a lot of what we do. And onboarding is just another extension of your conversion process and also of your customer service. Making sure your customers understand where they are and what they need to do next is a very important part of it.
Yeah, they need to know exactly how to get the value out of your product that you've promised them. And they will blame you and they will not enjoy the experience if you make them feel stupid. So you need to have really good onboarding and continuous education and really good help system. But also what we try to do is build community so that your peers can be as helpful as coming to us.
So now we've talked about the why you need a product. So in the next episode, we're going to talk about how you go about finding a profitable market.